Rick Rowden from ActionAid International. ActionAid is an international development NGO. We work in about 45 countries, mostly in Africa, Asia, and Latin America. We've just had a small office here in Washington for about 5 years or so, and so most Americans aren't really that familiar with ActionAid, although we've been around for about 30 years. Our headquarters is based in Johannesburg, South Africa, and we work a lot with small farmers, national coalitions of small farmers, women's rights groups. We work with HIV/AIDS activists, and also public education activists, and we do this at the national and international levels. Part of what I wanted to talk to you about today is some of the work we've been doing for the last few years with economists, trying to understand what some of the underlying dynamics might be around the inability of countries to scale up their public investment and their public spending generally, overall in their national budgets, and also specifically how this has been impacting health and education budgets, and specifically health and education spending on wages for health and education personnel. And part of our work stems from the frustration on the ground of a lot of our partners in many countries who've been trying to get more spending on doctors and nurses and teachers, but who've been unable to do so. Traditionally, our colleagues and our partners on the ground will go and talk with the education or health ministries, and those officials there say, oh, it's not us, go talk to the finance ministry. And the finance ministry people tell our partners, they say, oh, well, it's not really us, go talk to the International Monetary Fund, the IMF. And then we go and we talk to the IMF and they say, oh, it's not us, go talk to the finance ministry. So we've been sort of going round and round for many years with that kind of thing. And so we've actually been working with economists to look more deeply into what's going on with some of those policies. What we've sort of come to understand is that there was sort of an important turnaround in policies in the 1980s as it relates to the IMF and the World Bank. And these are institutions that give development assistance to poor countries. And the role of the IMF is very important because before you can get World Bank money, or usually before you can get USAID money, or any money from the other bilateral and multilateral creditors and donors, you have to be what they call in place or on track with your current IMF loan program. They call that the sort of signal effect. The other donors, they look to the IMF first and they say, they ask the IMF, does the country have the right economic policies in place? And only when the IMF says yes, does the foreign aid really flow, and also the debt relief, debt cancellation, does that really happen? So the IMF really has a tremendous amount of power, and it's very hard for a lot of people to understand the connections between what the IMF does here in Washington and what they put into their loan programs for countries and the actual health impacts on the ground. There's several steps so that get more and more convoluted as you go. So we've been trying to explain this to the health advocates that we work with in many countries, and it's sort of a tricky thing, but I'll try to give you a very quick presentation here today. What you see here is just a traditional conventional pie chart of, like, let's say, a national budget of a country. And when the IMF loans in the 1980s really kicked in with some really deep budget cuts, there was a whole new set of loan programs that started in the 1980s for countries, and that was in response to a lot of economic crises that had been going on in the world that had really impacted developing countries in a hard way. There was a global economic recession, oil prices went up, commodity prices from countries that they were exporting went down, the interest rate they had been paying on their previous development loans shot way up. All of these things culminated in the late 70s, early 1980s into what was called the Third World Debt Crisis. It was a huge economic crisis in most countries. And so the IMF sort of stepped in at that time period and started putting conditions on its loans. And what I want to talk to you about is just two conditions in particular. The deficit reduction targets, how much they made countries pay down their deficits and how quickly. And the other one is the inflation reduction targets. And both of these policies, when they were began to be implemented in the 1980s, what happened is governments cut back their public spending significantly. And to help cope with those insufficient health budgets and education budgets, the World Bank suggested a couple of things. They suggested user fees, so they were calling on governments to charge for health clinics that used to be free, to charge school fees for primary schools that used to be free. But a lot of data started showing in the 1980s that those measures were ending up keeping people away from accessing health or education. So the efficacy of charging user fees became to be a very controversial issue, and not really one that's helped countries get increased public spending. Another suggestion of the World Bank in the 80s was what they called budget recomposition, saying recompose your budget. It's the way you slice up the budget pie. So, like, let's say agriculture is the red slice. They would say take money out of agriculture or infrastructure or military spending and put it into health or education. So they say recompose the way the pie is sliced. But budget recomposition is also has its limits to how much it can really work to increase health and education spending. So what we're looking at is the fiscal and monetary policy targets in the IMF loan programs. Again, the deficit reduction target and the inflation reduction target. And we look at the way both of these things make, what we want to do is go from smaller national budgets to bigger budgets. And so what we're really talking about is the way that these two policies in the IMF loan programs impact the size of the overall budget. So it's not just about user fees or budget recomposition, but we're really looking at how can the national budgets be bigger. So, let's see, I'm not sure if this is really working. Oh, there we go. Okay, so what we see is the way the deficit reduction targets have a tendency to make the national budgets bigger. Most countries traditionally, historically, have been able to run up moderate budget deficits. That's like maybe 3% of GDP, 4%, 5% of GDP, and most countries have traditionally had longer periods of time to pay those down. Economists see these long-term trends in countries where you have a period of higher growth, where you tend to build up a budget surplus, and then you have another period where growth rates slow down a little bit, and therefore you exhaust your budget deficit or your budget surplus, and you start to build up a budget deficit, kind of like what we did in the 1990s. We built up a big budget surplus for a while, and now we've paid that down, we run it up into a budget deficit again. Okay, so they call that counter-cyclical policies. But the IMF doesn't let low-income countries do that. When their growth rates slow down, they're not allowed to engage in deficit spending. And there's a lot of questionable reasons as to why that's the case. One of the things we learned in the last few years is that the IMF doesn't really have a lot of justification in the empirical research, in the peer-reviewed economics literature, for why developing countries shouldn't be able to engage in a little bit of moderate deficit spending and to be able to pay down those deficits over a longer period of time. So we have big philosophical disagreements about this with the IMF, with the staff, but what's really disturbing for us at the end of the day is there's the opinion of what the IMF says they think is necessary, and then the historical literature, the historical evidence, and what's in the peer-reviewed economics literature on the efficacy of these deficit reduction targets in the IMF loans. So we've been very concerned that what the IMF has been doing for about 20 years, 25 years, is making the overall national budget smaller than they need to be. And so we're concerned about that. We're also concerned about the inflation reduction targets. Again, this one is a little bit trickier too, because this has to do with a more complex set of relationships. I don't know how many of you have ever taken economics, but it's just sort of a basic thing about the relationship between growth rates and interest rates, like your interest on your credit cards. If you suddenly had your interest rates go up to 50% on your credit card, you'd think twice about, you know, buying something on that card. Well, when interest rates go up high, businesses and companies, they also think twice about taking out commercial loans that they need to expand production and expand employment. So what happens in the economy in a given year, if you raise the interest rates really high, the amount of spending and investing and employing that happens in the economy that year starts to slow down, and you get a lower GDP growth rate at the end of the year. And why that's important for health is what that means is that the government then brings in less tax revenues and has less expenditure available for the public health system, well, for everything in the budget that year. So what we're really wondering is the way the relationship works is the IMF is very concerned with driving inflation down to very low levels, and the way that they do that is they jack up interest rates. So we've been asking a question of do countries really need to get inflation down as low as the IMF is insisting, and do they need to be raising their interest rates so high in order to do that? And it's sort of a complex thing, but we were also, again, we were surprised to find that they don't. There's a big difference between what the empirical literature shows in the peer-reviewed economics journals and what the IMF insists on getting inflation so low. So a couple of countries we're working in right now, Sierra Leone and Malawi, the IMF wants to take inflation from this moderate level of, say, like 15%, 12%, and drive it down to the 5 to 7% range. And they're making the countries have very high interest rates in order to do that. So the economists we've been working with ask a question, and they say, what's the cost of that? There's actually this thing called the sacrifice ratio, where for every point lower you drive inflation lower, you sacrifice a certain amount of GDP growth and employment in the economy. And when we learned that, we sort of were so confused, because we have, you know, the IMF likes to claim that its policies are very pro-growth. They always say its policies are pro-growth. And really, they're sort of not. They're more like a little bit anti-growth. They're what they call contractionary. They're actually compelling countries to have lower GDP growth rates at the end of the year than they otherwise could have. And so it makes sense to do what the IMF wants to do if you have a country with very high inflation. Nobody wants inflation to be too high. But when inflation is already down in this medium range, what the economists call the gray area, the argument for doing what the IMF is doing and driving inflation lower still and jacking up interest rates to do that is really a questionable thing. And it's sort of a little bit backwards from what the World Bank and the other donors have said they want to do over the last 5 years or so. Maybe many of you have heard of the Millennium Development Goals, the MDGs. So a lot of the donors have committed to scaling up spending, to increasing foreign aid, to help countries achieve these Millennium Development Goals. But there seems to be a contradiction between helping countries get more foreign aid, helping countries to increase their public spending and investment on the one hand, and following these IMF policies with the other. And so we're concerned about the way that the deficit policies and the inflation reduction targets make the budgets unnecessarily smaller. And like I said, what we're interested in doing is getting these budgets from being unnecessarily small to being potentially bigger. The New York Times sort of saw this contradiction in 2005. They were talking about it also, saying that there's it seems to be this incoherence, because some of the biggest donors, like the U.S. government, the U.K. government, the Germans, the French, who are very powerful on the boards of the IMF, that they're doing two things. They're trying to increase foreign aid and increase spending, but at the same time they're approving these IMF loan programs with these very tight fiscal and monetary policies that are preventing countries from increasing their spending. So it seems to me like there's a policy incoherence thing here. We have to ask the U.S. government and the other big players on the IMF board, what is it that you really want to do? Do you really want to, you know, help countries increase spending, or do you want to keep deficits and inflation super low? Because you can't have it both ways, and that's what's happening right now. Is both things are being attempted, and it's not really working. So just really quickly, what we're doing, what I wanted to tell you about is this project that we're doing in four countries, ActionAid is doing, with U.S. groups here in the U.S., and also with education and health and AIDS activists in Sierra Leone and in West Africa, and Kenya and Malawi in East Africa. And we're working with about 8 or 10 groups, like the nurses' associations, some of the teachers' unions, but also the civil society coalitions, who are advocating for getting more doctors, nurses, and teachers hired in their countries. And we're going to put them together with macroeconomists to do 4 sets of economic literacy trainings on these issues over the next couple of years. But in addition to that, to learn about these exact policies that we're talking about here, but in addition to that, we're also working with groups there to raise the political profile of these issues. Normally, the IMF visits these countries about twice a year, and they meet with the central bank and finance ministry officials behind closed doors, and they hammer out the IMF loan conditions that way. And so we're trying to work with our partners there to open up this process a bit, and we're going to host a series of public events in these countries over the next 2 years that will happen right before these IMF mission visits to the countries. And we want our partners to take what they've learned from the economists that they're working with and to really open up discussions with the central bank and the finance ministries, with the key legislative committees in the parliaments, with the labor unions, and with the domestic media there in the countries. And we're going to do this a few times over the next few years. We really want to open up these discussions about the efficacy of the degree of restrictiveness of these targets. Again, there's a real debate amongst economists and with the literature about fiscal and monetary policies that can be too loose on the one hand, and nobody wants that. But we're also concerned about when policies can be too tight, which is what we think they are right now. So there is this range of other policies where governments could adopt somewhat looser fiscal and monetary policies and be expanding their government expenditure overall, and not just next year, but over future years. And where we're working on the ground with our advocates to get every last doctor and nurse and teacher hired, we're really interested in exploring those alternative fiscal and monetary policies to see where they can really play a role in increasing the investments in health and education that are really desperately needed. So if the policies right now are unnecessarily restrictive, we're trying to find that out. And if they are, we're going to try to push to get them up, to get them loosened somewhat. So we're also working with groups in the United States, and we're working with the U.S. Congress on this issue, particularly the House Financial Services Committee and the Senate Banking Committee, because they have oversight over what the U.S. Treasury Department does. And the U.S. Treasury Department is our representative on the executive board of the IMF here in Washington. So we're very much interested in trying to get the Congress and the U.S. Treasury Department to use our tremendous influence on the IMF executive board to change the way the IMF adopts these policy targets and to put pressure on the IMF to really open up this discussion and to consider adopting looser policies. So we're trying to raise this awareness and develop this awareness in these three pilot countries, but at the same time we're working with groups here in the United States on this to do this from the top down level as well. And this is just a pilot project that we're doing in these few countries. We're doing our second economic literacy training on this for U.S. NGOs, for health and education and AIDS groups, but also for others who are interested in this. We're going to be doing that in December, the first week of December here in Washington. And I've got more information about this on the tables back here and up here. So if you want to get more information, you can do that too. But anyway, I'd be happy to answer any of your questions about this if you have time. Thank you.